This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, this is going to be a great day. I have in the studio with me Louise Harris, who is I think you're the chairwoman for the Bay Area Professional Writers Guild and a member of their anthology committee. Hi, Louise.
Hi. Happy New Year, Patsy, and all your listeners.
Okay. Well, thank you. It's wonderful to have you here because, you know, one of the things that you had a Christmas party for the Bay Area Professional Writers Group. It was wonderful.
Yes, I did. I am the chairwoman to the anthology committee, and when we were discussing the Christmas party, they wanted to have someone to offer their home, and I offered mine because in the past, the parties have been too early and I hadn't been able to attend. So I thought
if you have it at your house,
I can set the time, right?
We're sure you're going to be there.
Right.
That's one way to guarantee that you're going to be there. Well, I'm so happy to have you here. And then today I have on the phone in a few minutes, I think she's on the phone as a matter of fact right now, the author of a really great book called Bloodstains with Bronte, Catherine Bolger Hyde. Catherine, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, Catherine. Well, I am so happy to have you here because I love Bloodstains with Bronte, and I love the book before that because, you know, I am a sort of a Jane Austen nutcase.
So am I.
Well, you know, I was such a Jane Austen enthusiast and still am that as soon as I had enough money, I bought a house in England, a little cottage, not far from where Jane Austen lived at Steventon. I was about 15 minutes as a crow flies from her home, so I could go over there and be inspired whenever I wanted to read and think about writing. And so your previous book, of course, which was based on Austen, it was fantastic.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
And thank you for having me here.
Well, I'm so happy to have you because, you know, one of the things that I love, well, I love cozy mysteries, and of course, this is one of the coziest. The new book is, as I said, I'm just showing it to the camera because we have also a podcast here, and I want everyone to see it. It's a very nice cover. And Bloodstains with Bronte is another of your, it's the second in your series of crime with classic mysteries, right?
That's correct.
And the first one which was Arsenic with Austen, which was a great name. Now, it's funny, I know that you mentioned at some point in one of your blogs that you were an overnight success, but it only took you 10 years to get there.
That's right.
So tell us a little bit about the book, and then we'll talk about your background. But first, let's talk about this book, because this is the second, and it picks up the story about that you started in the first book. So tell us about it.
Okay. The protagonist, Emily Cavanaugh, is a literature professor at Reed College in Portland, Oregon, which happens to be where I went to school. In the first book, she inherited a house in a little coastal town called Stony Beach and decided to spend an extended period of time there. So she took a sabbatical from her professor job. So in the second book, she is remodeling this mansion to be a writer's retreat because she never had money before, and she feels guilty about having all this money in this beautiful house and using it all for herself. So she's remodeling the house, and she brings in this crew, and tensions develop between Emily and her young housekeeper, Katie, who's a single mother, and the people on the crew. And then Emily throws a murder mystery party at Halloween to raise money for the local clinic. And the person playing the victim in the mystery play turns up actually dead.
Aha.
So that's when things get really interesting.
And they certainly do. And there are shades of, well, of course, one of the wonderful things about both of these books, you weave in there a lot of historical information about both of the writers, Austen and Bronte, and a bunch of other ones. So tell me, you know, What inspired you, which authors inspired you to write mysteries?
The first mystery author that I loved was Dorothy Sayers. A friend introduced me to her when I was in my early 20s, and I immediately fell in love with Lord Peter Wimsey and with her writing. I particularly loved the way she brought in references to literature and history and all sorts of things. I mean, once Harriet Vane comes on the scene, Lord Peter and Harriet talk to each other in quotations all the time. And that's something that my family actually does.
Well, I am also a great Dorothy Sayers enthusiast. How about you, Louise? Do you like?
I haven't read Dorothy Sayers. My first love was Agatha Christie.
Well, of course. And that this Halloween theme in the new book is a little bit in one of Agatha Christie's books. Of course, she has a Halloween book too. I always think of that Dunking Apple part. But you know,
Way you were describing it, though, it sounded a lot like Donna Andrews. Have you read Donna Andrews?
No, I haven't.
Okay, she writes all these books about birds. I mean, they're mysteries, but there's birds in the title. And she always has an event at her historical house, and then the murder happens at the event. So that's why I was...
The nice thing, the wonderful thing about cozy mysteries is that once you get into them, they really do make you feel cozy and at home and like you're with friends. And why I like your books, of course... As I said, I love Austen and Bronte, of course, and having all these literary little tidbits, I think, is fantastic. You know, at the time when Dorothy Sayers was writing and she put in Latin, people said, oh, you can't do that. But I still find it so amusing to get to a part where she's got Latin and she just says, it's more or less like she's honoring the reader. She says, all right, if you want to know it, you can look it up.
That's right.
Exactly. So, you know.
And nowadays it's even easier.
It is. It is much
easier. Google it.
So, you know, in this book, you have a lot of twists and turns, and it's a great little mystery.
Thank you.
Of course, the first book, took you how long to do the first book?
It took about a year to write.
And then there's a wonderful period where you have rewriting, right?
Well, that's the total time of the drafting and the rewriting was about a year.
So now, how did you find an agent?
Well, this is the part where the 10 years of slogging paid off in a rather wondrous way. I had started writing the mystery. I was not really sure that my idea had any merit whatsoever, and I didn't know whether I knew what I was doing at all. And I found out about a conference for mystery writers that takes place in my area every year at the Book Passage bookstore. And it was expensive, and I would have had to, it was 2 hours away, so I would have to get a hotel, and I couldn't afford all of that. So I applied for their one scholarship, for which you had to submit, I think it was 10 pages of your work in progress. And I didn't have much hope, but I actually won the scholarship and was
wow.
able to go to the conference. And as part of that, I was given a chance to meet with an agent, and the agent read my work ahead of time, and she actually contacted me ahead of time and told me that she loved my work and was very eager to meet with me. So, I was over the moon about that, and when I actually met with her, she loved the idea for the series, she loved my writing, and she said, send it to me as soon as it's done. So, I was about halfway through at that point. I went home and finished it within the next 2 months, I think, sent it off to her. She read it over Thanksgiving weekend and offered me representation.
Oh, That's almost a fairy tale, and it shows that.
Congratulations.
It really is a fairy tale.
Exactly.
And then she sold it to the first editor she sent it to, so.
Oh, wow. It keeps getting better and better. Was that in the Sausalito store?
Yeah. No, it was the Corte Madera store.
Corte Madera, because I know the Sausalito. I used to live in Sausalito. So that just shows that it takes persistence, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because that was the fifth novel that I wrote. I'd had four that I sent out over and over and over and got rejection after rejection. I had another agent for a while, and she wasn't able to sell them. So we parted company, and, you know, I didn't give up. I didn't come close to giving up, but I was tempted to give up.
But one of the things, and I tell all of the writers who ask me, I do tell them that to do some of these workshops, it really does help, because not only do you learn about writing, you learn, you actually get to meet people like you did. And they're a wonderful opportunity. That's why I love the second book, where you're having, because I was wondering, you know, what's she going to do with this big house? And I so love the premise of you know, that she's going to turn it into a place. First of all, I like Emily Kavanagh. I like the character that you've developed, and I wanted her to do something really great, and so that she is turning this house into a retreat for writers, I think is a fantastic idea.
That idea actually was partly inspired by the setting that inspired the series, which is there's a real life town on the Oregon coast called Rockaway Beach, which I fictionalized into Stony Beach. And for the last 10 or 12 years, I've spent a week there every summer at a place called Colony House, which is owned by the Oregon Writers Colony, and they rent it out at a very reasonable rate to members of their group. So I've been meeting there with about 8 like-minded writers in a kind of a fluctuating group for the last 12 years. And so the existence of that house as a place where writers could come for a reasonable amount of money and just concentrate on writing for a weekend or a week or however long they want. that was kind of the inspiration for Emily turning her house into a similar sort of place. Only much more glamorous.
well, she inherits a lot of money there, so it's nice. But I think one of the fun things, I always love stories where they take, it doesn't matter, it can be anything, wherever there's a house and they refurbish it. I have this, I love the idea of it. So I thought that really got me right away.
Yeah, I've had some real life remodeling going on as well.
Yes, haven't we all? I hope I have well, actually, you know, just when I finish and I think I can't do anything more, I don't want to do anything more, then I think, well, I could just maybe fix this up. I have to control myself, because I've done it too many times over and over. And right now, all I have, I have my house is a library. I have books and books. And so I'm not going to do any more remodeling for a while. I forget the bathrooms. Everything else is okay, as long as I have my books.
Yeah, my house is like that too. Bookshelves in every room.
Yes, it's just bulging like
crazy.
And of course, since I started this program, I am so very thankful to all the publishers who keep sending me boxes of books and saying, hey, pick which author you want to interview. And I say, okay. So it's fun. Now, you know, as I was saying, I looked at your webpage, which, let's mention the name of it. I think it's a very nice webpage.
It's kbhyde.com.
Okay. Kbhyde, H-Y-D-E, .com. And it's a very nice webpage. And you have there your blog, which I think is it's fun. I think you have some interesting little articles there, and one of them is you call it 12 Secrets to Writing a Great Novel. I don't know if you want to tell us 12 secrets, but can you tell us some of the secrets to writing a great novel that you've discovered through this 10-year process. By the way, you know, I had Lee Child on, and mm-hmm. because I guess you started writing around the time you were 40, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Lee Child was 39 years old when he lost his job, and he unemployed and no money, and he had to do something. And that's when he, and feeling sort of in a not really great place, he sat down and he started writing, of course, his first Jack Reacher book. And one of the reasons he wrote it, I think he felt like sort of killing everybody around him at the time, you know, for firing him. Because it came as such a surprise, and so it worked out very well for him. So it's just an example. You can learn. You can start writing anytime, right?
Yes, that's absolutely true.
Okay, so tell us some of the secrets of writing a great novel that you've discovered.
Well, as I think I said in the blog post, I don't think there are any secrets in terms of writing technique. I think that that part of the equation is different for every writer, and it's something that you have to find for yourself. But the two things that I think are essential for anybody to get far enough to develop that technique and write a great novel are persistence and humility. You have to keep going regardless of all setbacks, all obstacles. The world is going to set out to discourage you and put you down, and you just have to have enough faith in yourself and your writing to just keep going through everything. And humility is incredibly important because you can't learn without humility. I've also, my day job is editing, and I've had so many people submit manuscripts to me, and you know, maybe there's some potential there, but it needs a lot of work, and I'll write back to them and explain what I think it needs. And people divide into two groups. There are those who say, well, what do you know? I'm just going to take this as it is and go self-publish it. And then there are the people who say, thank you for your input. I'm going to go learn more about writing and work on this manuscript, polish it up, and then maybe I'll send it back to you. And the second group are the people who have a chance of someday writing a great book.
Exactly. And it is so important that you have this, you have a passion, and that you don't give up, right?
Yes.
That's right.
Absolutely.
I think Louise has found that too. Louise has been working hard on several books, and she has some published, and she's working on a new one right now. And it is just a matter of being, as you said, you had already written a number of books before this one was picked up, before the first one, The Arsenic with Austin, was picked up. And I think I want to say, too, that it was a very clever idea to do this, a crime with a classics mystery. I like that.
I think every author should have a hook. That's why all my books have 1776 something in it, in the title, because I consider myself the 1776 writer, even though they're not set in 1776. So I think that would be her hook, is to have a mystery with a classic.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, of course, you have to love history, too, that you sort of delve back into the history of the books. In the case of this one, it of course is so much fun to be able to go back and look at an author's work and analyze it and see how you can use it. In your case, you've used a quote from beginning of every chapter, you have one of the Bronte sisters' quotes, right?
Yes.
I like that. And that, I think one of the nice things, too, about a book like this is if someone picks this book up because they're just looking for a modern sort of mystery, then they read these quotes and they start to say, oh, well, maybe I should read Bronte if I haven't read it before. And that, I think that also draws people in.
That was something that I really hoped for when I came up with this idea, because I love the classics. I always have, and I know so many people who have never even read them, who think of them as something that was inflicted on them in high school, and as soon as they got out of school, they just embraced the opportunity to never read another classic again. So I think there's so much of value there, and you have to learn to read in a little bit different way than people are accustomed to nowadays. You have to have the patience to get through the chapters of backstory that may begin the book and all that sort of thing.
Did they give you tests of the Ubervilles when you were in school?
Yes.
Why? Why yes. Tests? I mean, of all, now I want to know something. Of all the great classic books, I mean, we have all the Bronte, we have Jane Austen, all of her books, but why that horrible test? I mean, that girl is responsible for turning more people off of reading than anyone in the world.
I never read that Party. One.
Well, good.
I mean,
I had Jane Eyre, and I have to say I didn't like Jane Eyre. I only got through 12 pages of it. So,
well, see, this is what happens in school. When they force you to read something, they don't understand that it then takes away from the wanting to read. And so often it can be simple things like reading in the first chapter, you know, in the beginning of every chapter where you have this little tidbit of a book, and it makes you start to think, whoa, I think that would be interesting. I think I could read that, and I want to read it. And now, of course, I have to mention, because this is, I think, something so great, that you actually were a Russian scholar. And and you read War and Peace in you can still read War and Peace in Russian, you know, I was thinking about that. I think that's so wonderful. And I tried when I was young to teach myself. I didn't have, and I really should actually go back and read it in Russian. So, did you enjoy that, studying Russian?
Oh yes, I loved it. Russian is a very rich language, and the literature is so fascinating. It's actually, there's a relatively short period of time during which Russian literature developed as compared to English, for instance. But into those couple of centuries, they crammed all this incredibly marvelous work with such a deep insight into human nature. I think that's what I love about it the most.
Absolutely. Now, what is your new book based on? The next one in the...
The next one is Cyanide with Christie.
Oh, that's going to be fun.
Yeah. The book is complete. It's not actually contracted yet, so I can't tell you when it's coming out. But I had a lot of fun with actually using a mystery author. There's so much more that you can draw on, you know, playing off of all her favorite tropes and that sort of thing. It was a lot of fun to write.
Well, that sounds fascinating, and I know that as soon as it comes out, you're going to be back here on Joy on Paper, because it's a joy to talk to you, and I want to tell my listeners that they can find Bloodstains with Bronte by Catherine Bolger Hyde wherever books are sold. I know here in the local area, Barnes & Noble is a wonderful store. You can pop in there and grab the book, or you can order it online at Barnes & Noble or Amazon. And I just want to thank you so much, Catherine, for being on the program today, because this is my 104th program for the year. And so I was so happy that I could get you on this year. And I hope I have you on again next year.
Well, thank you. It's been a great pleasure talking with you.
Well, I want to tell everyone that also they should go to your website, because it is kbhyde.com, and have a look at it. And scroll through Catherine's blogs. They're fascinating. And as I said, she has more information there for writers. And I think everyone will enjoy it. So again, Catherine, thank you again so much for being on the program today.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Okay, same to you. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, well, that's fun, huh? She's interesting.
Yeah, it was good meeting her.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, wow, when I think about somebody who can read War and Peace in Russian, I love it. And I'm
That's an incredible skill.
Yes, it's a challenge. Maybe I'll take it. Like, I don't have enough to do this year, but I am one of those people who I never have enough to do. I can always think of something. So now you can, you know, ever since I read.
Do you actually know Russian?
Well, I can learn Russian. I know enough of the. I can read. I can read a little bit, but I never actually thought I would take War and Peace. But, you know, why not? This is one of the wonderful things in life, that it's never too late to learn something. And I've discovered that from my sister, Natalie, who absolutely is amazing. You know, she is, she's been a great reader all of her life. She could be an editor for any major publisher, would be just thrilled to have her as an editor, because she is so quick and so fast at getting understanding a book and finding errors. I mean, she can always find, she takes a library book and find 100 errors in no time. But the wonderful thing about her is that she partly because of her love of libraries, that she went to the library one day and got a book on origami. She had seen a television program about it. She had never done origami in her life. And she gets this library book, and she teaches herself the most complex origami that, I mean, it's mind-boggling.
Wow.
Isn't it fantastic?
Yeah.
You know, and I just, that's the great thing about libraries. I want to encourage everyone to go out there and go to your local library, get a library card, and, you know, just pick a subject, any subject that you, one of the things, of course, the nice thing about origami, you can do it while you're watching television even. You can find a hobby that you can do that will keep your mind active and all of those little brain cells working. And that's a wonderful, wonderful thing about life, that we can keep learning. As right here with Catherine Bolger-Hyde, she started writing when I think she was like 44 or something, she said in one of her blogs. And look at this. After just a few years, she has, you know, two very nice books done, selling very well, and she's very proud of herself, as she should be, and anybody can do it. And so I just want to say I was very happy to have her on, and I'm happy to have one of the goals of Joy on Paper is to give authors the opportunity to promote their books, whether they're best-selling authors or just starting off in the business. You have to remember, best-selling authors also need to get out there, and this is very important, because one of the things, and I want everybody to remember this, one of the things that an agent looks for when they are taking on a client, a new client, is, first of all, of course, they want an author who can write well, who has a good book, but most agents are looking for long-term relationship. They don't want an author who's going to come in with one book. They want an author that they feel they can be confident will be writing for years to come, because agents want money year after year. That's the name of the game. And they also need to know that an author is willing to go out there and to promote their book. It is no longer the tie. You can't do it as perhaps the old days.
The publishers are not doing marketing anymore.
That's right.
And they don't even do it for the best-selling authors anymore. You have to market your own book.
Exactly. And even for the best-selling, there's, you know, they might have a three-week opportunity there to do a book tour. But after that, it is up to the author to get out there and promote their books. And so that's why I so love doing Joy on Paper, because I can have authors who are just have new releases, and I have authors who have books that have been out for a while, and they can still bring them back to life and tell people about them. So that's what we're doing here at Joy on Paper. I have to take a quick commercial break, and then when I come back, we're going to talk to Louise about her books and about the Bay Area Professional Writers Guild.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author? An artist?
an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. My employees and I would like to thank you for making MyPillow possible. Years ago, when I invented MyPillow, I thought I was the only one out there with problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I'd flip-flop all night, or wake up with a sore neck or headache. So that's why I invented MyPillow. You can adjust MyPillow's patented fill to your exact individual needs to help you get to sleep faster and stay there longer to get the quality sleep you need. I back it with my 10-year warranty and my 60-day money-back guarantee. And now to thank you, I'm bringing back my best offer ever. Buy one of my MyPillows and get another one absolutely free.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY. P-A-T-Z-I.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my guest in the studio, Louise Harris. Hi, Louise.
Hi, Patsy.
Okay, well, we had a great little talk there with Catherine Bolger-Hyde, and now I'm so happy to talk to you about your books. I just want to tell my audience that Louise is also won the Editor's Choice Award for poetry and is named in the book of 2007, The Best Poets by Poetry.com, and one of her stories was featured in the Bay Area Professional Writers Guild book, Sink or Swim, How Overcoming Obstacle Makes Life Worthwhile.
I actually have poems in here.
Oh, you have poems. Okay, good. Well, you know, this is, of course, an anthology that was created for...
It was created at the Bay Area Professional Writers Guild, Inc., is an organization that helps writers succeed, but it's also people who make their living from writing. And that means journalism, blog writing, magazine writing, whatever kind of writing they do other than, so it can be fiction, nonfiction, published, unpublished, as long as they're making their living through writing. So what we decided last year was to celebrate our authors in the organization and have people write a story or a poem that talks about overcoming obstacles. And that's where Sink or Swim came in. And I was the one who edited the anthology, and I am the chairwoman of the anthology committee, and we sell it. But the stories in there are all from different authors, and they all have some kind of obstacle that had to have been overcome. It's a very inspiring book, and it is something that if you are struggling, you should read this because it will help you get through whatever you're struggling.
Now, Bay Area Professional Writers Group has a monthly meeting. And do you invite people to attend if they're interested in meeting possible editors for their own books?
Yes. Anyone can attend our meetings. They don't have to be making their living. And the meetings are free. They just have to pay for lunch. So if you are someone who is interested in writing but you don't know how to get started, you are more than welcome to come. And yes, we do have people who are professional editors. I happen to be one of those professional editors. I'm working on two books right now. One is a series using celebrities as the main character, and then they are thrown into this fantasy world. And the other book I'm editing is a fictional version of Jack the Ripper. Based on this woman's discussions with her great aunt. She wrote, and she did a lot of research, and she wrote this story, but it's fiction and about Jack the Ripper. So those are the two I'm working on right now, but I have also edited nonfiction and fiction.
And every month at the meeting, they have a speaker talking about a subject that is of interest to writers.
That is correct. In January, it's always the fourth Monday of the month at 1 p.m. at Perkins on Park Boulevard in Pinellas Park. In January, the person who will speak will be talking about tax issues relating to writing.
Okay, that is an important subject. Now, one of the things is, if you're not in this area, I am sure that wherever you are located, there will be a group of professional writers who are interested in helping other authors develop their platform, learn about legal things, and learn about tax, and learn about all sorts of ways in which to promote books. So you can look at your local sort of meetup groups.
I can tell you, since I lived in Arizona and Maryland, that in Arizona, it's the Arizona Authors Association. In Maryland, it's the Maryland Writers Association.
Well, see, they are available, and they are. It is really a wonderful place where you can go to meet professional writers, especially professional editors who are available to help. And every author, you need to have your book edited, so right?
Yes. I always tell everybody I meet that they have to do two things to be successful in writing a book. The first is have a quality editor, and the second is to have a quality book cover designer.
Exactly. Now, one of the things because I have so many new authors who come to me and they say, well, I don't know, I don't want to go to an editor because maybe they're going to change what I'm writing, and they're going to, you know, try to change the way my characters are speaking. And I say, no, that's not what an editor does.
No, what we do is we take what you have, make it sound better, and give you advice for where it's not working. In the book that I'm doing for the author who is putting a famous person as the main character, I noticed that he didn't really have a climax. He was going along, and it just ended, and I felt that he needed to punch up the ending a little bit to make it more climatic. And he took my advice and he changed it. And my other client, I've had to totally revamp it because she put a lot of history in it, but she didn't really put a lot of plot in it. So I had to create a plot. But I'm not really changing their voice. It's still their voice.
Which is very important. Now, one of the things, of course, writers who are using, who have dialogue in their books that is of a specific nature, whether it is a Southern dialogue or it is a Brooklyn dialogue or whatever, you don't fool around with that, because that dialogue is dialogue, you know?
Yeah, I don't touch their dialects. I know that they put those in for a reason, so I leave them. And I can tell by reading about the characters whether the character is well-educated or not educated. And if they're not well-educated, then they shouldn't speak well-educated. So when I edit a book, I make sure I keep their dialogues the way they want them.
But consistent in nature.
But inconsistent.
In other words, you're not going to have somebody who's from England suddenly talking like they're from
America.
Yeah, right. Texas. You know? Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Actually, part of the issue with the Jack the Ripper book is that she is speaking modern language, and I have to keep putting it back into the 1800 language because she wrote it as if she was in 2017, but the characters are actually in 1800s. So
it is something. But this is why an editor is so valuable to a writer, because they see it with a different eye, a clear eye, that sometimes a writer gets so involved in the story and so loves the story that it's sometimes hard for them to take that step backwards and say, okay, this has to be fixed, and this has to be fixed.
Well, it's like going to a doctor. They say doctors are the worst patients because they think they can heal themselves. Well, writers are the worst book because they can't edit themselves.
Exactly. Now, talking about going back in time, talk about your book. What are your books about?
Okay, well, as I said earlier, my books are always set in modern day, but they have some kind of link to the Revolutionary War era. My newest one, The 1776 Musket, is the third in my series. And it is, the musket is actually used as a bomb. It blows up a university library. So it's interesting that you were talking about libraries and how important they are.
Uh-huh.
The students at the university go into the library for research, and I do make sure I mention all that because I agree with you. Libraries are important, and there a lot of people think, oh, I can do everything online. I don't need to go to a library.
Oh.
And I disagree with that. So anyway, the library is blown up by the musket. And the student, she is a computer student, and the FBI hires her to to use her computer skills to help find the killer. And the other person who is the main character, he is a teaching assistant for the history department, and he is an expert on 1776 muskets and reenactment. So the FBI hires him for his knowledge of creating muskets and how they can be used for bombs and how that small network. So it's a really fun book. And the reason this is the third, because although the two main characters are different, the FBI agent is the same person that's in this book. And the person who is actually the victim, she's not killed, but she's a victim, is the aunt of my first novel.
So it's sort of carries through.
Yes.
Where did its fascination with 1776 come from?
Well, okay, it came from the fact that I'm from Philadelphia, and I just really love the Revolutionary War era and everything like that. But when I wrote 1776 Scroll, the very first one, I had given my publisher a list of titles, and that was the one that they liked. So I thought, okay, I'll just be the 1776 author. And all my books are set in Philadelphia, and they all have some connection to the past. So even though they're modern day and they're romance, they are suspense and they have a connection.
Well, Philadelphia is rich in history, so that should keep you going for a long time.
Yes, this one is actually University Penn. It's based at University Penn. So
it's exciting, right? It's exciting to be a writer.
I love writing. It's my passion, and I always knew I was going to be a writer. I'm not one of those people that just woke up one day and said, oh, I think I should write a book. I knew from the time I was 8 years old that I was going to be a writer. And I went into school for journalism for that reason, because I wanted to help people with my writing. I still help people with my writing. But I got the love of romance novels from my grandmother, because my grandmother would sit on the beach and read her romance novels. And she would get to the exciting part and her leg would start shaking. It was a big joke in the family, but it was something that made me want to read them, and that's why I write them for her.
Okay, that's a good reason to read romance. So, you know, it is a wonderful thing about writing that you can keep doing it forever.
Anywhere. I've moved several times because of my husband's job, but because of my profession, I can easily adapt to wherever I'm moving. So that's a good thing too. You can write from anywhere, about anywhere.
Well, I think the work that you're doing for the Bay Area Professional Writers Group of encouraging writers and working on the anthology was also wonderful, because for many of the people in the anthology, it's their first time to actually be published.
That is correct.
And there were some young people involved.
Yes, we had two students. One of them's in college now, but the other one is a senior in high school. And students have trauma too, and they don't always have an outlet for their writing or for their trauma. And we decided that we were going to make our anthology open to students as well. So we had two students, and we do encourage students to come to our meetings, although they're in the daytime. And so it's hard for them to come because of school, but we do work with Poynter Institute. We work with University of South Florida. We work with St. Petersburg College. And because we believe in promoting students and their careers
in writing.
Writing, yes.
Fantastic. That's so important.
But we also support older people, too. After they've retired and they don't know what else to do, they want to start writing or have something because they don't want to be sitting around doing nothing. We have several writers groups that are older people as well.
Well, that's what I'm always saying, that one of the things is sometimes people will say, well, I know that I have an interesting family, and I would like to preserve these stories that are in my family. Even if you're not going to write a romance, if you're not going to write thrillers, if you're not planning to write a series of books, you have family stories that you want preserved. And it is so wonderful to be able to sit down, and you will be so proud of yourself to write these stories out while you're still around and you remember them and preserve them for your family.
The very first manuscript that I edited was my great uncle's, who he did not want to sell it. He just wanted to pass it down to the family, all his stories. And that was the first book I edited. So.
But that is exactly, a memoir is a gift that keeps giving, because you write it once and you give it to your family and they will be handing it down forever. Because wouldn't you love if one of your great, 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 great grandparents had written a book about the family back then and you would have it in your hand?
Yes, would have been a great gift. And there's so many things that got lost in World War II in Europe. I know when my uncle was researching his family history and he went to Germany, he couldn't find it because of the bombs had just destroyed so many of the documents. So that always makes me sad that we lose documents because people either stop writing them or they got lost in fire and we're not saving them. And I think family stories are important to save.
And gradually, as the years go by, the stories are lost. And that's why it's so important that you find that sort of joy on paper that I'm talking about all the time. Even if it's just your own memoir, you write it down, get it on paper. And then, of course, before you publish it, before you even publish it for yourself and put it online, because it's so cheap for you to be able to write your own book and put it online. You don't need anyone really to do it for you. It's very easy, and it will be there forever. And your family, 200 years from now, because Amazon will still be here, believe me. Of course, they might by then take over the world at the rate they're going. And your book will be there. And so even if it's just a little memoir, 100 pages with family stories and family pictures, because you can include pictures in books that are published on Amazon. So think about that and find that joy on paper that I'm always talking about. And it's just a wonderful feeling to know that you're preserving these stories, right?
Right. It is definitely important to do that. And I think that even if you don't want to sell it, if you just put it down so that people have it generations from now, it's important. Because if you think about it, how did historians learn about the 1800s and the 1700s? Through letters and diaries.
Oh, the wonderful. The best people in the world for writing letters and diaries were the British. Well, at that time, you know, the sun did not set on the empire. And wherever there was sunshine, there was certainly some British person there writing diaries and letters home. And I know in my research for a book about India, my greatest joy is to find all of these letters and books that these people wrote. Even I found perhaps one of my favorite books that I found was written in 1860 by a lady who was married to a soldier in India. And she starts the book off and she says, well, I really don't know what to write about, but I'm going to list everything that I see. And so she starts with these long lists of the household goods, the cost of the household goods, every little details that are so precious to me now.
Right.
I mean, at the time, she thought in the book she mentions sort of that she's perhaps being a little bit foolish and really nobody's interested in this. And she had no idea, you know, years later, somebody would grasp this book and hold it to their heart because it's just such a wonderful book with details of everyday life in India, about the servants, about the food, about everything that you need to know.
And I think that 50 years from today, people aren't going to have those same stories because they're not being put down. And people think everything's online. But seriously, you have to be able to learn about this stuff somehow.
Exactly. So that's what I want to encourage everyone. Make a New Year's resolution, which is coming up soon, and start writing. And so, you know, Louise Harris, I want to thank you for being in the studio today. It's been a joy for me.
I had fun.
Okay, good.
Oh, and I'd like everyone to know that they can get all my books on Amazon. They're okay. All available through Amazon.
Okay, so go to Amazon and get 1776 and Louise Harris, and you're bound to get
yeah, a list. You'll get all three.
That's
yes.
Right, and you have your author page there. So this is a wonderful thing about this day and age that you can get all the books. And in the old days, we had to search through secondhand bookstores to find these books. But it's wonderful, and I'm just so happy that you were on today. And it's, as I always say, you know, one of the most wonderful things in life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in audible books, which I have really taken a shining to this year, thanks to a gentleman in Moscow. And several other wonderful, wonderful audible books. And I'll be talking, I'm going to have a few narrators coming on in January and February who have narrated some award-winning audible books. And I'm going to have them on so that you can hear their voices and get that sort of flavor of what the book is about before you buy it. And again, I remind everyone that Catherine Bolger-Hyde is the author of Bloodstains with Bronte, and it is also it just came out a few weeks ago, and a wonderful book that you will really enjoy. And meanwhile, make sure that you stay safe this coming weekend, which is going to be, my goodness,
New Year's weekend. Yeah,
didn't it go quickly?
Yeah. also, Patsy.
We have time. Say.
Okay. I just wanted, your writers want to talk to me about editing, they can contact me through you.
Absolutely. My new webpage is coming up, and when I have it, you're going to be right there on the list of available editors. So I want to thank you again.
Thank you.
Okay.
Have a good day.
Okay,
and happy New Year.
Say something nice to somebody today, and I'm going to say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, and he's saluting me,
thank you.
I'm saluting him. Whoa, thank you, Ed. Thank you. Happy New Year to everybody. Bye-bye now.